Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.
Broadcasting from iTunes, Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and Spotify, this is the Linda Monroe Show, and I am Linda Monroe. Today my topic will be death of a loved one, forgiveness is the key. On June 20th, 2010, that was the most devastating day of my life. My grandson, Rashad Ingram, was murdered at the age of 15. Very smart young man, very funny young man, had his future set in place, and life was cut so short. This was the weekend of Father's Day in 2010, and this was a real strange night. I don't live in my hometown, and one of my sons at that time didn't live in the hometown, which was Rashad's dad. So by me working at American Airlines, I have to work weekends and holidays. So I went down on Saturday night to wish my sons a happy Father's Day. So we were laughing and carrying on, talking about what they were going to do for Father's Day. And my son sent his oldest daughter with the children to the place where they were staying in Maxton, North Carolina, to get ready to go to church the next morning for Father's Day. Well, my granddaughter forgot her clothes in Laurinburg, so he didn't want to come back to Laurinburg, so she just let him out. And some guys was hanging out across the street, and they called him over to that house. Well, that was the first mistake that he made. It was a gang that was in rivalry, so as soon as my grandson walked over there for a minute, they rolled up and shot up the house. I have not figured out to this day how my grandson, Rashad, was the only one that was murdered at that crime scene. It was a couple of guys that got shot, but being at 12 o'clock at midnight, how do you see to shoot somebody in the head? My grandson was shot in the head, and it was an instant death, the doctor told us. So my son, after we laughed and talked for a minute, he said he was going to get the kids to bed so they could get up and go to church the next day. And about 15 minutes approximately after he got to Maxton, he called his twin brother Terry and advised him that his son had been shot. So Terry runs out the house, and I'm like, what in the world going on? So I called Terry and was like, what has happened? So he's like, somebody just shot Rashad. So I'm like, oh my God. And I tell you, every feeling out of my body just left. Now his grandparents lived a couple of houses from my mom's house. And so I ran over there and told his granddad that he had been shot, and jumped in my car and headed to Maxton, North Carolina. I haven't figured out today either how I even drove to Maxton. But I did call my job and advise them that I wouldn't be to work the following day. So his aunt was a dispatcher at the police. She was a dispatcher at the police department in Maxton. So that's where I went, because no one told me where he had gotten shot at. So as soon as I got to the police department, they grabbed me out of the car and told me the ambulance had him on his way to Scotland Memorial Hospital. So we all got to Scotland Memorial Hospital, and I tell you, I don't know how anybody else got in that emergency room, because all of my family was there, all of his friends was there, but we had to try to locate his mother. So the other twin, Terry, he was rampant and raging, and Terrence was back there with Rashad. So they did send us a message out that they were going to have to airlift him to Charlotte. So by the time they got ready to roll him out to the helicopter, I told nobody, look, don't get near him. I want to just see him for myself. And so when they rolled him out, I rolled all the way to the helicopter with them. And I just stood there. It was like the Twilight Zone in my mind. I just stood there and all these people around me, but I couldn't hear anything because everybody was running the cars, getting ready to drive to Charlotte, North Carolina, which was about 2 hours away from me. And as the helicopter went up in the sky, I knew at that point that I would not see my grandson alive again. So my mother had an attack, breathing attack, so they had brought her to the hospital as well. And so I had to stay there and make sure she got back home okay. And tried to find somebody to drive me to Charlotte that night, because the grandparent that lived a couple of doors, they had already left by the time we got back to my mom's house. So how many do you know when you really need somebody, is nobody there to be found? So I tried to find somebody all night, because everybody I knew really had already left and went to Charlotte. But I tried to find somebody that would take me to Charlotte that night, but I could not. And so the next day, I tried to find somebody and nobody would take me to Charlotte. So stayed up all night waiting on that phone call from Terrence. And I got it about, I would say, 6 a.m. that following Sunday morning. He was ramping and raging, and he informed me that my grandson was deceased at that time. But like I said, I already knew that when I went out to that helicopter with him. I knew I would not see him alive again. So I told him I was going to try to get a ride there, and if it was anything I need to stay there and do, or did he want me to come to Charlotte? So he told me if I could get to Charlotte, to come on to Charlotte. Well, it took me 3 days to get to Charlotte, because I have no clue. My grandson at 15 had put on his driver's license to be an organ donor. So that's why they had to airlift his body to Charlotte to take his organs, because like I said, he was deceased when he left Scotland Memorial Hospital in Laurinburg. So anyway, the day they were taking his organs is the day I got to Charlotte, which was that following Monday, I think it was. And by the time I got to Charlotte, they had already taken his organs and sent him to the morgue. So I still did not get to see him until the day of the funeral. Like I said, he had a bright future. He had, was in the Air Force ROTC, the junior Air Force ROTC in high school. His goal was to go into the Air Force upon graduation and become a commissioned officer. And I thought that was just so great that at that age and time that he had plotted out his future. So anyway, we come on back to Laurinburg. We buried him on his 16th birthday. So at the time, we thought this was my son's only son, but come to find out, my son had a son 1 week prior to Rashad's murder, and he looks just like Rashad. So I always tell my son, look, God sent you Rashad again, and he took the older Rashad, because it's just mind-boggling that that happened that way, because this little fella, he looks just like his brother. And so we planned the funeral and had the funeral services, and I told him we needed to get away, because at this point my son was on a rampage. He was going to find out who murdered his son, and he was going to take him out of this world. So I said, well, let's go to New York for a week, let's calm down, see what the police going to do, And, you know, we'll deal with this situation when we get back. So, lo and behold, while we were in New York, the police did call us and advise us that 7 defendants had been arrested and was charged with first-degree murder. And so when we got back, you know, we went and talked to the DA and started getting court proceedings started. Like I said, I'm in prison ministry, and I never thought this fate would fall upon my family. I have seen people go into courts, they wanting to jump on the defendants. They wanted to fight family members of the defendants, and I just couldn't visualize how they were that angry. But I tell you, when this situation happened, we were very, very angry. And so the DA decided that he would try each individual separate, which was another devastating situation. Because we had to go into court 7 times to hear the events of this night. And it just made the anger increase in all of us to the point where my children could not speak to the judge. They could not speak to the prosecutor. And of course, he wanted the death penalty. And that's what comes with first degree murder. But the strangest thing, when we started going to court, officers wouldn't show up, witnesses wouldn't show up. So the DA had no other alternative but to try to get people to testify against these defendants, their co-defendants to testify against them, and he dropped the charge to second-degree murder. So as of today, we're waiting for the last defendant to be tried, and 2 of the co-defendants, they were let go because they were just an accessory after the fact. So they weren't there the night my grandson was murdered. They were just in a place where they took the weapons to dispose of after the murder. So 2 was let go. 2 have been incarcerated. I think their term was 8 to 12 years. One has pulled his time. The other one is still incarcerated. The other 2 are still incarcerated at the Robeson County Jail because they did turn state witness against the co-defendant that we're getting ready to try, hopefully very soon. And the strangest thing about this last defendant, it's like he's obsessed with my son. We haven't really pinpointed who was the actual shooter. But the way this guy act, he evidently must be the actual shooter. They say once they get them all tried, we'll find out who the actual killer was. But he's always around my grandchildren, he's always around my son, and it's like he picking at him. He's on making videos of the night of the murder, and it has been a trial, believe me. And I'm just so thrilled and thank God that my son has not killed this person, because I advise the prosecutor, if he kill him, that he will not be going to prison, because we're trying to tell you about this man and y'all won't arrest him. So if my son kill him, then he will not be going to prison. But anyway, people ask me all the time, Linda, as a prophetess of God, how are you dealing with this situation? Like I said in the beginning, it was so much anger there for these people, because when we went to court, there was no remorse. They didn't feel guilty about what they did, and that just escalated the anger in them. They were given the opportunity to say, I'm sorry. They haven't done that until, not even until this day. None of them had said, I'm sorry. You know, we didn't mean to do it. Because the thing about it is, you know, my grandson was an innocent bystander. If my granddaughter had never let him out of the car and wait there, he would have never been in the crossfire. So here you got all these other people that were meant to be killed still walking around here. Okay? And so I told him, you know, the Bible says that if we don't forgive our brother or sister, that God will not forgive us and we cannot get into heaven. So that's what has given me some solace in this situation. And I'm praying because I've been trying to get my son and his children to go get some grief counseling. But it is just so hard for them to let go. And in order to let go and forgive, that's the first step you got to take. But, you know, my granddaughters, they are so much in anger, so much in hurt, so much in guilt, because they're blaming themselves for letting Rashad out of the car that night. But I thank God that they're taking their lives, and what they're doing with their lives is in memory of their brothers. In May, I had three granddaughters to graduate from college, and they did it in his honor. Now I have one granddaughter. She's having a real difficult time with it. She was 8 years old at the time, and she's having the most difficult time with this murder than any of the rest of them. So I am truly praying for her that she can seek God and get some sort of solace, some sort of relief in knowing that she needs to live a life so she'll be able to see her brother in heaven when she dies. But you know, you get to doing certain things, like I said, you become addicted to certain things when stress situations come into your life and you don't know how to deal with them. You start doing things you wouldn't normally do. And that's the point she's at right now. She's doing things she wouldn't normally do had this murder not occurred. But we're going to get her the help she need, and hopefully she'll be able to finish high school and go out and make her brother proud of her and be a positive person in this society. We don't know what the future holds for, but we're praying. But in order to forgive, the first step is to take that step to realize that you have to forgive. Because it's a real hard test to forgive somebody that's taken something so precious away from you. But being in prison ministry and seeing how the court do stuff, I was able to forgive these people. And it's still kind of hard because, like I said, they show no remorse. And like I told the judge, you know, every Father's Day and every June 26th, my son has to go to the graveyard to see his son. He will not see his son again until they get to heaven. And so hopefully, you know, these guys will take prison as a positive step in order to change their lives. Because prison is a place where God molds men. So I'm praying that they take the opportunity to get their lives straightened out and come back out into society to be a positive person and to help somebody else not go the way that they went and destroy other people's lives. Because it's devastating when you destroy somebody else's life. Because a life, when you take a life, you can never give it back. And so this is the point I'm trying to tell my oldest son, Terrence. You can't kill these people because it's something that you can never give back to them. So we're, our family is constantly in prayer for him and his children. But forgiveness, once you forgive, the relief is so sweet. He doesn't understand. He's hurting himself not forgiving these people. Because once he forgives, the hurt, the pain, the anger, all of that will cease. And he'll be able to live a somewhat normal life. I know he'll never be able to bring closure to this situation because this was his firstborn. But if he ever take that first step to forgive these people for killing his child, his life will be forever sweet. This is the Linda Monroe Show. Then I am Linda Monroe, broadcasting from iTunes, Bashani Radio, iHeartRadio, and Spotify.
The Bronx, Staten, and Manhattan. You are listening to BashaniRadio.com. New York City, always talking about everything.